While we were giving you a report about 6 months ago, and as Bob mentioned, I do normally send out each day what I call Word of the Day, and it's a Bible verse and prayer. And my PowerPoint presentation was not saved properly, and I don't know who did that, but anyway, probably you're looking at it. But when I saved it to my flash drive so I could bring it here, it saved it on there as a shortcut, and you know what the guys up there can do with a shortcut. Nothing's opened up. So I've got some pictures that they're just going to be showing, so maybe there's something there. I hope there's nothing that is embarrassing to Galena. It's hard to embarrass me, but something might embarrass Galena. I don't know. But it's just a bunch of pictures that have to do with our mission work in Magadan, in Tyre, and Nikolaev, and I had taken some pictures out of that file and put into a PowerPoint file, and it all looked beautiful and slick and everything, but we don't have that tonight, so that's technology for you. So anyway, enough with apologies. They say never apologize, just jump right in and act like that's the way it's always supposed to be. So there it is. And Colin did mention, and I really appreciate hearing about Indonesia. And Glenn and I went home thinking, man, let's go to Indonesia. And, of course, we're that way anytime we hear about any mission work. We're ready to go. We just just pack a bag and we just get all excited when we hear about the opportunities where people are opening their hearts and their minds to the Lord Jesus Christ. For example, as a result of this Word of the Day that I send out, many people forwarded on and they forwarded to others. And one family in India, in a city in India, received it, and they wrote and asked if I would come there, and they know that they could have 3,000 people who would come and hear me preach the gospel, and they just can guarantee this. And so you think, wow, and you just don't know what to do with such letters. But we can't jump rabbits either, I understand that, and we've got a huge plate full of food for us as far as opportunities. And we're trying to do what we can in Russia. And at the present time, and I'm not even going to look at that, at the present time in Russia, Galena reminded me of this just a while ago, we don't have one single Russian male missionary in the whole gigantic country of Russia. Not a one. There is Eileen Imk, a woman that worships with, she's an American woman, and she is working there and living in Rostov, which is in the southern part of Russia on the Don River. It's known as Rostov-na-Donu, technically called, and not far from Ukraine. And it's a big city, and she lives there as a very active member of the church. And when Christians want to go and arrange adoption of children from the orphans' homes, then Eileen is quick to help them out. And she also teaches Bible in some of the public schools as she has opportunity. And so she's there. And we do have a school going on in St. Petersburg, Russia, where Joel Petty is working up there in St. Petersburg. But Joel is in America for about 6 months. So when he went out of Russia for those 6 months, there's nobody there. And you all know that many missionaries received the same harsh treatment that I did and were banned from Russia for at least 5 years. And most of those who were banned from Russia just chose, well, you don't want me, then I don't want you. You know, just chose not to go back and go through all of the hassle. But Galena reminded me that our attitude has always been, well, we're not going to give up. And it's something that's, you know, just in our heart and soul, we just have to go back. We must go back. And we just keep hammering on the door till we get our visas. And eventually, they do give us our visa. Once we just keep applying, and we've managed to receive our visas, and we're praising God about that. There's a big map up there, in your mind at least, of the Soviet Union. And that would be the first thing I'd have up there instead of whatever you're looking at. And the Soviet Union encompassed 15 major republics, and there were other regions where the Soviet Union occupied and was under their sphere of influence. And the Russian language dominated all over the Soviet Union. The Russian society made sure of that, even during the time when Stalin, who was from Georgia, was the leader of the Soviet Union. Russian was the language, and Russian was required everywhere in the Soviet Union. Well, Ukraine is one of the places that was a part of the Soviet Union, and the wonderful country of Ukraine, and we just have a new part of our family, we feel like, today with us, Marina, and she's just from Ukraine, as well as Galina and Zhenya, and myself. I feel like Yahahol, and I just feel like I'm also a part of the Ukrainian culture. But it is a country, if you don't know too much about that, the what's known as the Kievan Rus, or the Russian people, they actually started out there in Ukraine. Ukraine has a different language, even though you might say it is a dialect of the Russian language, but in fact, the Russian language, you see, extracted from the Ukrainian tongue, so and was modernized to what it is today. Whereas the Ukrainian language, it's unique, and I put a Bible verse each day in Ukrainian and in Russian language. And you can, for those who at least know how to read the Cyrillic alphabet, if you've learned that much, you can see the differences, and you can practice pronouncing some of those words and see the differences. But Ukraine is a country that is rich in opportunities for those who want to go there and are willing to just give up and go and do something for the Lord. You can go. It's difficult to go to Russia. You can go to Russia. Many of you have been to Russia. You can travel to Russia as a tourist, no problems. They want tourism. They want your dollars. You can go on a business venture. No difficulties there. We have a good friend who is an American astronaut, and he regularly goes to Russia, and we just received a Christmas card from Moscow with him and his family there in Moscow. And he spends either time in a space station or time there learning, studying with the other Russian, the cosmonauts. But there are many people who can go to Russia, but if you go with a religious worker's visa, which is the only way that Galina and I can go to Russia, because they know that's what we're really doing, then you're not so welcome. Why is that? Because the leadership of Russia believes that the Russian Orthodox faith should be the only faith for the Russian people. Therefore, they will ask you, well, who invited you here? Did somebody say that we need you here? This is just the attitude that the official group has. So we're not exactly welcome when we go to Russia to teach the pure doctrine of Jesus Christ. And that is sad, and it causes many people just say, well, if that is the way they feel, I just don't want to go. Well, we can't take that attitude. We must just, as long as we can get in there some way, we'll just keep going. And we can go, and we can still mail Bibles there. We can do many things. We can correspond with the Christians who are already there, which we do on a daily basis by email. We do it by SMS, by text messaging regularly. We stay in touch with the Christians in Tyre as well as in Magadan. And we were in Tyre in 1 year ago, last month. We spent the month of January 2009 in the city of Intai, which is in the far north of Russia, and we just had a great visit with the people there. The church has just gone down so far. So many people have moved away. The job situation there is bleak, and so the men who are working age, most of them have to travel outside of the city to go find work. So it is a very bleak situation there. But we just feel like that some good is going on now. That one young man there just recently, over the past few weeks since we've been back here, wrote us a beautiful letter and asking us to help them evangelize in the city of Intai again. So they want to spread the gospel. They want to wake up. They want to have a revival inside themselves. And they want to do, I'm talking about just two or three families here. That's it. But they know that they've got to do something. And they really want to do something. So we just feel close to them and we love them very much. And we want them to be able to continue to have the Lord's church in that far northern city of Russia. We really want you to know how much we appreciate the fact that you are our partners. We feel like when we're there that we have Del Rada with us. We have the Del Rada people just behind us and with us. And we know that many of you pray for us and many of you write us little notes of encouragement or even mail us something. We have somebody that mails us gospel advocates that are available on the back, and somebody's so thoughtful. They mailed Galena some Christian Woman magazines, and she says, oh, look at that. I can just use those lessons and just teach those outlines right out of that to women. So, I mean, there's things that people do. You're thoughtful here, and it's very kind that you think about that, just putting the postage on it and mailing it to us. And we do really know that you're with us, and we really appreciate that, all of you. And we know that you're praying and your support, and I'm not going to say one thing about needing funds. I'll leave that up to Bob because I don't want to take anything away from what Colin has said today. But I will just mention one little thing briefly a little bit later. We talk about a need in Magadan. There's a situation that is troubling for the people of Russia, and it troubles the people all over the world. First, there is the fact that there aren't missionaries going there. That's a sad thing. And our brothers and sisters who are there, many of them are working in the areas where they live, but not too many of them are being evangelistic and saying, well, hey, you know, let's go over there to that city. Got a million people over there, and let's go start the church over there. Let's go preach the gospel over there. The Russian people aren't doing that. And so, if it's going to get done, we got to do it. You know, if the gospel is going to spread, it's those who are willing to go, and you're young enough to go, and you have the energy to go, and the good health to go, well, go. Because the time will come when some of us just won't have the good health to go. We won't have the opportunities to go. So it is key. It is urgent that we must take the gospel to the Russian Federation, which, by the way, is the official name of the country of Russia. A lot of times people say, well, who's in charge of Russia right now? Who's running Russia? People ask me that question often, and just because I go to Russia, I should know who's in charge, right? And because we live there sometime, I should know who's in charge. Russians ask the same question. They also ponder over who's in charge, who's running this country anyway. And one time we thought there was a question, and dear Alexander Haig, he got on television and let everybody know that somebody's in charge. Well, a taxi driver in Moscow was asked this question repeatedly. Americans and British citizens would ride in his taxi in Moscow, and they would ask him, who runs Russia? Is it the new president, Medvedev, or is it Putin? And he just kept hearing this. Finally, he decided on an answer, a way to answer them. And the way that he decided to answer these people was, okay, if it is the people who are on pensions and are concerned that their retirement comes regularly, and that there is food in the shops, that there is social stability, therefore Putin. And he's running the country. And they think he runs the country. He's in charge. But if it's the billionaires, or as they're called in Russia and Ukraine, the oligarchs, then Medvedev, he is representing them. And he's running the country for them. So that's a gross oversimplification of the way things are, but it does in some way tell the truth about how it is. If you ask an ordinary Russian citizen, people like make up the Church of Magadan and Inta, normal working people who struggle, most of them don't have a car. In fact, we only know among our friends in Russia, we've got two. We've got Vladimir in Moscow, and Ruslan in Inta has a pretty nice car now, and he works hard and has to be gone 3 months at a time working in an oil field to have this car. But most of them don't even have an automobile. These are normal working people, and they just do without things that we take for granted all the time. And you ask them, about social stability and what should things be like? And their answer is, well, we just want somebody to be in charge. We want somebody to be a good master. This is their attitude. Their view of democracy is not the American-style democracy. Their view is, we just need somebody to straighten everything out and be a real master. So it is a different viewpoint there. Maybe you watch the news about the elections in Ukraine, and all this has to do with the work of missionaries, because it has to do with, are we going to be accepted? Are people going to give us a visa? Are they going to welcome us when we come into their city and we go by and take one of those nice little gifts to the police department like Brian gave me? And will they welcome me, or will they throw us out of their police headquarters? How will we be received when we go see mayors and things like that? Because we must get along with the leaders wherever we go and be accepted. Well, one of the candidates in the most recent election in Ukraine, and I won't say which one, except she's a woman, got on the news there and was on television, and she began to pray. And she asked all the people to pray for our country. Let's get on our knees before God. Let's humble ourselves before God. And Glenn and I looked and said, well, even if she's faking it just to get some political attention or something, at least she's talking about God in a country where, not too long ago, atheism was required in the schools. So there is some hope for a lot of change in the country of Ukraine. I used to drive through Arkansas sometimes and see on the back of a car, and the tag would say, Arkansas, land of opportunity. And I'd look at some of those ramshackle little towns and I think, well, who made up this sign here? It just didn't, I guess, you know, what is going on? Well, when things are bad, I guess when they're that bad, it can only go up. So that's probably what the person was thinking, a real optimist that made that tag. Well, hey, that's Ukraine. To me, Ukraine is a land of opportunity for the gospel, for a young business person. Maybe one of the pictures went by there and that showed the bazaar or the market, Rinok, where people can go and buy and sell. This is something that's a part of life in Ukraine, and this is one of my favorite things to do. And Galina doesn't like me to go in there. She said it's not safe in there for you to be walking around there among all these people. They'll pick your pockets and all that. But I just love it. I love the dynamics that goes on in a marketplace. It's really something unusual. It gets your blood fired up to go and be a part of a marketplace. Well, this is the way the nation is. Ukrainian people, they like to make deals. They like to trade, to buy, to sell, to barter. They're just naturally that way, and they're good at it. So it is a great land of opportunity. We walk out of our door in our apartment now, and a company that has the Golden Arches saw an opportunity, and they have their shop just about a block and a half from where our apartment is. And by the way, we need some exercise on some stairs. We've already gotten lazy. When we're living there, we walk up four flights of stairs constantly. And so we're already getting lazy. Probably need to come down and do this. But I kind of lost my wind just walking up here. But when you're not doing that every day, you get a little bit lazy not walking up steps. Well, people live that way. But many Western companies are seeing the opportunity in Ukraine. And they're moving into Ukraine with their companies, with their Pepsis and their Cokes and Wrigley's. And in fact, whatever you need. We don't have to take big bags of stuff anymore, Bob. We just don't have to carry all these big duffel bags like we used to. You just go travel light and you can get everything you need there. There are stores like Costco there. There are a European company called Metro has moved into Ukraine. And anybody who is wanting to sell things, they know that on the horizon, the nature of these people, the way that they like to trade and to buy and sell, that Ukraine is a good investment. It's a good place to invest. It is the second largest country in Europe. It's about the size of Texas, geographically. And probably somebody from Texas here, so we'll just say that Ukraine's a little bit less than Texas. But it's about the size of Texas, about that size, geographically. And there, it is a pretty big country. They say 48 to 49 million people live in there. So it has lots of opportunity for the gospel. We told you before how we came to be in Nikolai, which is down in the southern part of Ukraine, near the Black Sea. We're invited to go down there by a man who was baptized on a visit to Kiev, and he invites us to come down there. We go down there, and we just see a beautiful city of 500,000 people, and I had never paid any attention to it all. In Ukrainian language, it comes out pronounced as with an M sound, Mykolaiv. Don't ask me how to explain that, but anyway, instead of St. Nicholas, it's St. Mykolaiv. But that's the difference in the languages. And so if you look at a Ukrainian language map, it looks like that, Mykolaiv. But in a map that has been transliterated to English, it is Nikolaev, which is the most common way. And so he's St. Nicholas that it's named after. But anyway, it's a beautiful city, and they just have lots of people there, and people are so open to the gospel. And I'm constantly invited to go to many places. Some of you have joined our prayer for one more soul. I know Tony has, and I thank you for that. When we left to go there, we just were riding down to Nikolaev. And one of the pictures on the PowerPoint shows Galena standing there, and we are so tired, and she would hate me showing that picture. But we've been flying a long time, riding a long time, and we finally get there to this. We're in the bus station, off a long bus ride, and we're in Nikolaev, and we don't have any place to stay. We're moving there, you see. We're going to be there for, we hope to be, 2 more years. And so we're just got to figure out a lot of things, where we're going to stay and all that sort of thing. And we're just really tired, but it was feeling so good to us to know the opportunities that we have. And so we're just thinking, one person, Lord, let us find one person. And you know, we had this one young man from Nigeria, Akinrende, and Akinrende led to Afolabi. They're both now gone from Nikolaev, and they're going back to their home in Nigeria. They graduated from the Maritime Institute, and many of you became familiar with them through our correspondence. And they're both such good brothers in the faith, and they just learned so much. I didn't see anybody taking notes, but maybe I see one. Somebody might be taking notes over there. But Afolabi and Akinrende, anytime that I'm teaching, we have to keep feeding them notebooks. They're taking notes. Guess why? When they get back to Nigeria, they want to have something that they can teach with. They know they've got to teach people. So they just practically write out all of my lessons. They listen to everything I'm saying, and they're writing it all down, writing all the verse. And they'll look back to each other. What was that verse? They want to know everything. Hungry for the gospel. Hungry for the truth. That they can take back to their homeland and share it and plant the Church of Christ in their place. There's a big problem with the H1N1 virus. It was a scare around the world. And it scared a lot of people in Ukraine. And they thought it was going to really be bad. But thankfully, it wasn't so bad. It wasn't as bad as many people first thought it was. But you can learn a lot about mission work by just thinking about how a virus spreads. How it infects one person, and that person can then, in turn, infect another person. And that person infects another, and so on and on. This is the way that the gospel is spreading around the world. It just keeps spreading that way. Someone gets infected with a glorious message of salvation. Somebody hears the story of love, that Jesus came to save sinners. And the Apostle Paul said, of whom I am the chief, or I'm the main one, I'm the primary sinner. Before we just say, amen, Paul, you really were bad. You're quite a sinner, you old rascal, you. We should just say, with Paul, of whom I am the main one, and agree that Jesus came to save us sinners. And when we overcome denial, whether we live in America or in Ukraine, and we stop denying that sin is a part of what I do, and we admit, like Paul did, openly, that he's the biggest sinner, and we do that, then we will listen to God's wonderful plan of salvation, where Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned. That's the gospel that we encourage people in Ukraine, if they prefer to read in their Ukrainian Bible, they just read the verses in their Bible, and they'll say, oh, that's what it says. Or Russian, yeah, I see now. This is what it says. And if it says that, then it's something that I must do. So our task then is to take the virus, get infected with it, get a shot that will make us have this virus, and then go infect somebody else with this wonderful salvation that is available through obedient faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Where do we get our prospects? It's the hardest thing. It's always the hardest thing. We're standing at the bus station with our bags, and we're thinking, where are we going to get our prospects? Where are we going to meet people? Well, you just start where you are. You begin right where you are to start talking to people, getting to know people. So we immediately began to make up some advertisements on some yellow sheets of paper, and we start putting these all over the city until somebody tells us, hey, you know, I own that post there. You're supposed to pay me. Okay. Duh, okay. Nobody told us. So, because everybody else was doing it. Everybody was putting their signs up there. Anyway, we had to pay this guy that owned these places where everybody was putting their advertisements. But we advertise for free English lessons using the Bible. Learn English using the Bible. So when people come in to meet us and see who we are, what we look like, and to see how bad my English is, and that sort of thing, then we tell them in that first interview that we use the Bible in our lessons. In case they don't want to study English using the Bible, we want to make sure they know what we're doing. Then we're not going to deceive you that this is really about the Bible. They're going to be teaching you the Bible. And the very first lesson is so amazing. The first lesson that they're introduced to is all about the prodigal son. And these are people, they must have studied English for at least 3 years before we will accept them as a student, so that they can read and comprehend the Bible. And so the first thing that we do is we have them to read the story of the prodigal son. And then when they're, and they read it out loud, they read it in English. And if they want to read it in their native language so they really comprehend it, we'll let them do that. But we want to know if they can tell us what it is about. And then they will start to explain what they think is the meaning of that story. It's amazing how people, like this one man that we're just right now in a study with, Sergei. Sergei said, when I'm in my 20s, I didn't know anything about God. In my 30s, nothing about God. My 40s, nothing about God. And here I am in my 50s. I'm learning about God. It was hard for us not to tear up a little bit when he explained how good he felt that finally, at his age, he had the opportunity to learn for himself about God and how much better he already felt. He said, I already feel better just reading this and learning about God. Of course, after that, the next lesson, you go right into Genesis. And you start learning about how sin came into the world. We take that for granted, don't we? But if you're raised up in a society where atheism is taught all the way up, and you want to succeed, and you want to be a part of the military hierarchy, or you want to be a part of the police hierarchy, or you want to be a part of the government hierarchy, like our new brother Nikolai, who is a high educator, who founded a school there in Nikolaev, a school for young people who are in trouble. If you want to be a rising star, you wouldn't have a Bible around your home, in your pocket, in your office, and you surely wouldn't go to church anywhere. If anybody asked you if you're a Christian, you would deny it. So it's understandable how these people feel now. They are so happy to be able to sit down and study the Word of God with someone. We need people to come and help us. We need more people to come and sit down with folks like that and just share your faith and try to get them infected the same way that we are with the love of God, with the precious message of the gospel. And I'm going too long. And I'm sorry. I'll just tell you this. Another thing. We're invited to go into a university. And this is almost, to me, it was unheard of. To a public institution. And the dean says, you may go in there and teach them anything you want to teach them. You can teach them the Bible. You can preach to them. Just do it in American English. That's the only requirement. Wow. Okay. And these are fourth and fifth year students that are studying to be English teachers. They're studying to be interpreters. And he just says, well, you just go in there and just give it all you've got. That they're anxious to hear you. And they really are. There are ways to make friends. There's ways to meet people. And they're out there if we'll just go and make ourselves available. Well, we conducted a wonderful Bible camp We met so many children. We visited orphan homes. We're involved with children at many different levels, with our through our Bible camp, through just meeting people, street kids I call them, that love us and they come to us and they're already our friends. We're planning to leave on March the 20th to go back to our beloved work there in Nicolaev, and we just need your continued prayers for us as we make our plans, because it is so urgent that we're not getting any younger, and we know that there aren't many missionaries right now that are going to Eastern Europe, and I beg you to go. I beg you. You're probably just at that point in your life, maybe somebody just wondering, what can I do with the rest of my life? Go to Ukraine. Sit down across the table with somebody and say, well, just read that in your Russian Bible. Read that in your Ukrainian Bible. And they'll read it. Now tell me, what does that say? It's simple. It's just a very simple thing. They're literate people. They're interested in God. They want to know about God. And we tell them about the wonderful salvation through obedient faith in Jesus Christ. They will obey. Thank you so much. And you know, I just could continue talking, and I'm sorry. But I do want to, I can't emphasize enough how much we really love you. And we feel your love, and when we're there, and we pass your love on to the Christians that are there. And there's a couple that just moved into Nicolaev who were baptized in another city, in another Church of Christ, in another city, and we just learned this by email, and they'll be there to greet us when we get back. Isn't that amazing how God provides? And he's already had some courses, like some kind of correspondence courses in the Bible, and knows a little bit more about the Bible than the average new member over there. Thank you so much. And there may be somebody here tonight that is just wondering if this is the right time to make a decision to obey the gospel. What better time could there be than tonight? We used to sing, oh, why not tonight? And we might just ask it again. Why not? Why not, if you haven't obeyed the gospel, why not do it tonight? Why not step forward and make a commitment? Come down and give Doug your hand and give God your heart. Or maybe you need the prayers of this church. We invite you to come.